This is an iHeart podcast.
You know, your house smells. Don't get mad. My house smells too. I'm not indicting you. I'm sure you keep a clean home, but just time means you're going to acquire smells, whether those are cooking smells that get in your paint, your carpet. Maybe they're animal smells. Maybe you're a smoker or someone else was. Just living creates smells. I didn't realize that my home had a smell to it until I got my first Eden Pure Thunderstorm, the greatest air purifier I've ever owned in my life. This thing, I had it plugged in for 2 hours. I came back in the room and my air smelled so clean. I now own three of them. I'm not making that up. This thing has absolutely changed me on top of what it's done for my allergies. Go get one. Get two. Be like me and get three. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse. That gets you $10 off and free shipping. EdenPureDeals.com, promo code Jesse.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
I want you to picture something. I'm in a great mood today, so you're just going to have to bear with me. I just want you to picture something, though, before we get to how great my mood is. 4 or 5 extremely huge, violent, scary-looking dudes prowling around a room. All these guys have huge, scary-looking battle axes they're carrying around with them. These guys look like they'd be willing to use them. And walking with each one of these guys is a little brother. The little brother does not have a big, scary battle axe. The little brother just has a little knife. However, each and every one of these little brothers are borderline insane, short-tempered, constantly screaming at not only the other little brothers, but the big dudes with the battle axes behind them. And big brother with the battle axe, he's looking around the room and telling everybody, nobody ever better touch my little brother or you're going to die. Does that sound like a situation that's going to end well? Well, that's pretty much exactly the situation Europe was in the early 1900s. This was a time when the countries were, upheaval would be a lovely way to put it. Countries were changing, you know, for years, centuries. It was kings and lords and czars. And so many of those were going away, but kind of not going away. We're not hanging on. The major political powers, Britain, France, Russia, Germany, Austria, Hungary, they were there swinging a big stick. Not necessarily in a mood for war, but certainly could. Germany's certainly building up a military machine, but what they had was, in the Baltic region, all their own little brothers. And all their own little brothers in these various little countries in the Baltic region, Bosnia, Serbia, so on and so forth, they wanted to fight somebody. A lot of them wanted their independence. A lot of them wanted to fight each other. A lot of them wanted to fight their parent nation. A lot of them wanted to fight the other person's parent nation. It was, as the famous Otto von Bismarck, the German chancellor, he was one of the most famous ambassadors at the time as far as peace goes in diplomatic solutions, because he's probably the most famous diplomat ever. He said, we have a powder keg, a tinderbox. This whole thing is going to blow. He said, and it's going to blow because somebody in the Balkans is going to blow it.
Now, which leads us to Austria-Hungary. We have no great frame of reference for what Austria-Hungary is. Just sounds like a joint two-country venture of two countries we know exist today, Austria and Hungary. Well, yes and no. This is what you need to understand about it for our purposes today. Austria-Hungary was, yes, it was what you would know as Austria and Hungary, and a lot of other countries. Poland, Czech Republic, it was an empire at this time in the early 1900s. An empire, granted, old, rickety, not nearly as strong as they thought they were, but it's an empire. Led by a man named Franz Joseph. Now, Franz Joseph was a Habsburg. That name may not mean much to you. It should, though. The Habsburgs were a powerful family for hundreds of years throughout Europe. They were kings and queens. They believed supremely in intermarrying with other kings and queens and themselves, which created some obvious genetic difficulties here. Some deformities and such. When your family tree is a straight line, that's going to make for some problems. However, because they spent so much time intermarrying with this country's royalty and that country's royalty, there was a time when the Habsburgs were literally, quite literally, the lords of Europe. Very, very, very powerful family. And Franz Joseph was one of these Habsburgs, and he was in charge of Austria-Hungary. Well, the heir to the throne, the man who was supposed to take the throne after him, committed suicide, which leaves him with Archduke Franz Ferdinand, who was his nephew. And he hated his nephew. And he hated his nephew because his nephew dared to marry a woman who was not royalty. She was a countess. She wasn't some lowly peasant. She was a countess, but you must understand the different cultures here. He was not allowed, I'm not joking, in many areas and during many events, he was not allowed to be seen in public with her. She had to stay at home. That kind of shame. Straight out of the movies. Which brings us to the Bosnia-Serbia situation. Serbia was its own country. It was under the protection of Russia. That's going to be important. Bosnia, it was under the protection and, well, rule, you would say, of Austria-Hungary. Serbia, I know you may find this shocking, had a lot of Serbs. Bosnia had a lot of Serbs. Bosnia had a lot of unrest. Bosnia was a very, very, very dangerous place. Many of the people in Bosnia wanted Austria-Hungary off of their shoulders so they could go join their Serb brothers. Austria was such a dangerous place. The governor of Austria, a man obviously under the governor of Bosnia under the Austria-Hungarian rule, would not go out in public often. Most of the time, he stayed in his home because it was a good way to get killed. Now, the Black Hand. A really, really cool freaking name. If I ever start one of these groups, it's absolutely going to be the Black Hand or something, Chris. However, they were terrorists, I guess, depending on your definition of terrorists. They were assassins. They wanted to kill somebody in the Austria-Hungarian Empire. They get word, well, this Archduke Franz Ferdinand is coming to Sarajevo. Well, that sounds like a ripe opportunity. So they decide they're going to kill him, and I'll get to all that in just a moment. Now, here's where things get funny, and this is what we're actually going to talk about today. Keep in mind, Franz Ferdinand, he knew that his friends, the Germans, really wanted to start a war badly. They had built up all this military. They wanted to test their mettle, take over some new territory. Franz Ferdinand also knew that his uncle, the Emperor of Austria-Hungary, hated his guts. Hated his guts. He also knew the Serbs wanted to kill someone, most definitely would love to kill him. The governor of Sarajevo, where he was visiting, also knew that it was a dangerous place. And yet, Archduke Franz Ferdinand, with his wife, Sophie, goes to Sarajevo and decides to travel through the city in not only an open car, but an open car with gigantic Habsburg flags waving on it, which is basically the worst insult you could possibly do to those people on one of their holiest days, an anniversary of a Serb assassinating an emperor. Yeah, hang on.
You're listening to The Jesse Kelly Show. You're welcome.
Archduke Franz Ferdinand, the heir to the Austria-Hungarian Empire, heir to the throne, taking a little cruise through Sarajevo. He was there to witness military exercises and hops in an open-top car with his wife, Sophie, to cruise through town waving Habsburg flags off the vehicle during one of their sacred days, a day where they honor assassinating somebody. Cruises through town, and unbeknownst to him, there are assassins all over this town. The Black Hand, that secret terrorist group I told you about, they're waiting with bombs. They're waiting with guns all along the route that they know he's going to take. Oh, did I mention the route that he was going to take in pretty much one of the most dangerous cities in the world, especially for him? It was made public. He cruises along this route, approaches one of the assassins with a bomb. Assassin sees him, smashes the detonator against a light post to activate it, chucks the bomb. The driver, by the grace of God, sees this in time, guns the engine as soon as the bomb's in the air. The bomb bounces off the back of the open-topped vehicle instead of landing in it, explodes underneath the car behind, injures 20 people. Archduke and the wife speed off. Woo! Thank goodness we averted that crisis, right? Obviously, we're going to increase security, bring in the military. Let's get him quietly out of town. Let's not take any chances. Oh, no, they didn't do any of that. You see, he drove down. He had a speech to give. They dug his speech out of the vehicle that was just bombed. They dug his speech out to bring it to him. It still had blood on it. He gave the speech, then inquired to the governor, so we're bringing in the military to get me out of here, right? And the governor says, what do you think? Do you think we are a city of assassins? Well, it turns out they were absolutely a city of assassins. It's time for them to leave. Archduke Franz Ferdinand and his wife Sophie get back into the vehicle. Open, still open, not making that up. And word had been passed down that, hey, we're not complete idiots. No, we're not bringing in any extra security. Of course not. But we are going to take a different route than the planned route out of here, because that would be just stupid, right? To take the same route? Only nobody told the driver they were taking a different route. So the driver leaves, and the driver starts along the same route. Driver's cruising along, Archduke in the back, wife Sophie in the back. And what do you know? word gets to him at just the right time that he has taken the wrong route. They should be going a different route. So what does he do? Well, what would you do? He slams on the brakes. He slams on the brakes right in front of a Mr. Gavrilo Princip, one of the Black Hand assassins who's standing right there staring at them with his gun in his hands. Princip pulls the gun, steps up on one of the running boards of the car, shoots the Archduke in the throat, shoots his wife in the back. Game over. Now, this leads to World War I, which led to World War II directly, which led to the Cold War, which essentially shaped the entire world you see today. And I'll talk a lot to you about World War I because I find it to be the most fascinating conflict in the history of the world. One, for the sheer horrific brutality of the fighting, as I've said several times, you'll hear me say several times, of all the wars and all the different ways they've fought wars. I'm talking about swords and spears and bows and arrows all the way up to modern day today. If you could tell me one war that would be the bottom of my list of wars I had to fight in, it would be World War I. Horrific. Not just the gas and the trench warfare, just the people's minds literally breaking under the strain of a war that you can't even imagine. Did you know that more Brits and Frenchmen and Italians died in World War I than died in World War II? The only real thing making World War II bigger than World War I was the whole Germany-Russia thing. Otherwise, World War I would dwarf it. It was horrific. Well, now Archduke Franz Ferdinand is gone. Austria-Hungary tells Serbia, you have to do this long list of impossible things. Serbia says, we can't do that. Serbia looks to their big brother with the battle axe. You remember him. Russia, are you going to let these Austria-Hungarians talk to us like that? And Russia says, no, I don't think I will. Step aside, little brother. Austria-Hungary turns to their big brother, Germany, and says, are you going to let these Russians talk to us like that? And he says, no, I don't think I will. Step aside, little brother. And so on and so on. And World War I begins. But here's what's always struck me as so strange about all this. Everybody seemed to have wanted it all along and seemed to have actually celebrated it once it happened. You remember that Emperor Franz Joseph of Austria-Hungary? When he was told of his nephew's assassination, didn't even bother to conceal his happiness with the fact he was dead, and now it looked like they were going to be able to go to war. Germany, they were led by Kaiser Wilhelm. Well, you remember what Germany was doing, building up their military leading up to this? Kaiser Wilhelm, by all reports, was positively thrilled at the thought of getting into this. I know what you're thinking. Well, Jesse, Serbia surely didn't want it. They were about to die. Oh, did I forget to mention the Black Hand, that terrorist group? Directly, I don't mean in a small way, directly connected with Serbian intelligence. Are their CIA, directly connected and oftentimes people claim led by Serbian intelligence. But Jesse, Russia surely didn't want this, did they? Russia was led by Tsar Nicholas, and he had an extremely fragile regime as it was. So he had no business starting a war, but you do get that this whole thing could have been stopped if Russia had put the brakes on it, right? If Russia had, instead of playing the protective big brother, simply told Serbia, look, you assassinated their guy. You're going to have to swallow that jagged little pill. What I'm saying is, during times of crisis, during times of major, major upheaval where everything seems to be not just upside down, everything seems to be changing right before your eyes. It's just everything seems to be changing. Isn't that what it feels like right now? During times of major upheaval, when things are changing, no, you don't ever want to be a conspiracy theorist guy, but yes, you do want to take a very, very, very hard look around at the various players in the game, and you need to do a strong analysis of, wait a minute, who's suffering and who's getting everything they appear to have ever wanted? Some people seem to be enjoying all this.
Your holster is way more important than you think it is. It's just way more important than you think it is. What, look, and I get that. The holster's not the sexy part of carrying firearms, right? You want to talk about your weapon and your ammunition. You want to talk about your safety training. You want to talk about how you did at the range. Oh, look at my groups. I was doing these farrier drills today. And all that stuff's really important. I mean, really, really important. I'm not discounting that. But I've known so many people who do all those things. They take all the necessary steps, and then they carry with a holster they bought from a big box hunting store that was made 1,000 at a time. Please, don't put your life in one of those holsters. You need to trust Northwest Retention Systems because it's all custom-made gear. It's the only thing I carry around. NWRetention.com. That's NWRetention.com. Use the promo code Jesse. Get you 10% off.
This is an iHeart podcast.